Does it work? Are we okay? Yeah? Testing, testing. Testing, 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 testing. Can people hear me in the back? All right, great. We'll get started here in just a couple minutes. So the presentation's actually at 10:15. It's not really a couple minutes, so we have a little bit of time to relax. Maybe we'll start a little early since it looks like the room's filling up. All right, we're a minute early, so we're going to go ahead and get started. Look at all these people out here today. You guys are all here for the XAML list controls talk, right? I mean, you noticed which talk it was. Good morning. I'm Terry Adams. I'm really excited to be here today to talk to you about XAML list controls. I'm a dev lead for the controls team, so we spent a lot of time working on these controls and building up a framework that we think will help you build Windows 8 applications. I did want to announce that there is a talk later this afternoon about the JavaScript list controls, that if you'd like to attend that, you can attend that as well. I have a person from my team here, RJ Boca is here, and so we're going to stick around as long as you need to answer questions. I know that sometimes I've heard Microsoft people might be a little scarce. We'll be around here until you're out of questions, or until 5. Hopefully you'll be out of questions before 5. Today I'm going to talk about I'm going to go over the Windows 8 personality only briefly, because you've probably seen that quite a bit this week. I'm going to go over the list scenarios for Windows 8, the ones that we are helping you with. I'm going to go over all the list controls. I'm going to cover the list controls that are in the XAML framework and tell you what we use them for and how they're used. And finally, I'm going to go into some more advanced features, and that should really be entitled code. So I'm going to go jump into some code, build up an application, and use it as an example to look through our features. So I wonder how many times people have seen this. Actually, I want to get a vibe for the people that are here. How many people were at Build last year? If you could please raise your hand. Okay, probably about 25%. How many have built a XAML application in the last year? Oh my gosh, that's great. I love that. Okay, great. So moving back to the XAML personality, as we move to the XAML personality, the focus is around fast and fluid. It's about focus on the content, not on the Chrome, right? You've probably heard that a bunch this week. It's a common look and feel for the application, so that as people use the apps that you're building, they will look like the apps that are in Box. As I move through this, you can see several of the common screens. You can see one thing that's in all of these applications is data, and lists of data, and grids of data. And so as we look through the list scenarios that we have, one of the things that is important, obviously, is displaying lists and grids of data. It's allowing people to select items, single selection, multi-selection, extended selection. It's also reordering. People want to reorder lists. That's a common scenario. Everybody should be seeing this in their apps. People want to drag and drop to reorder and drag and drop between lists. That's features that people use. People want to use grouping. They want to hierarchically arrange their data to make it easier to navigate. People also want to navigate large lists of items. I mean, that should be obvious. In the past, we've always had scroll bars, right? You scroll to the end if you want to scroll. With touch, it's a little bit different of a paradigm. And so we've built in some functionality to help you navigate large lists more easily with touch. And finally, the most simple feature is viewing one item at a time. And you're like, what is that? And it's like a photo viewer or something like that. But as I shift into the controls, the very first control that I'll talk about was a control that we built for that specific feature. And in this case, what you're seeing is the modern reader application, and it's a flip view. The flip view is obviously used to flip from one page to the next. Here you see a PDF page. The way that you navigate this is you can swipe across the page in either direction. You'll notice up on the screen are two buttons. I took this screenshot while the buttons were appearing. And as you move the mouse, buttons will appear that will allow you to navigate with the mouse. But as soon as you're done, those buttons will go away. And that's the idea of focusing on content and not Chrome. In fact, if you have a tablet, and all those of you lucky enough to get a Surface this week, if you are just using the tablet, you won't ever see these buttons because you'll never move into a mouse mode. So the experience isn't kind of altered for you because you could be using a mouse. So in addition to displaying basically a single item at a time in a constant size, this control also supports virtualization. So if you have a 10,000 page document, you're not going to create 10,000 pages and put them all in memory and wait for them to be shown. We only create the minimum number of pages to create a consistent UI experience. Now the next control, this is the modern OneNote application. And you're looking at a list view control. And the list view is in the center of the page, and it doesn't look very exciting here, but it's one of the signature controls for Windows 8, and it's one of the more powerful controls that we have in the box. This control supports almost all the scenarios that I mentioned before. It supports having items of multiple sizes or varying heights. Because this control is used to vertically scroll lists, it's more about horizontal heights that you're using to change the size. It also supports single, multiple selection. One way that it supports multiple selection, I don't know if you've seen this week, is with touch. We use a swipe gesture. So when you swipe in the opposite direction of your panning, that's how you select multiple items. It supports that out of the box. It also supports grouping. It supports drag and drop and reordering. And it also supports virtualization. I wanted to talk a little bit about a couple virtualization schemes we have. We have two schemes, one incremental virtualization. And the idea behind that is as I only load the data that's needed, and as I pan, the control goes and gathers more data for you, another page. It's more of a paging mechanism. The scroll bar doesn't extend all the way to the bottom. It extends only to the length of the data. We also support classic virtualization. And classic virtualization is similar to the Bing image search, where you know how many items you have, and the scroll bar goes clear to the bottom of the number of items. But the items aren't realized until you get to that section of the page. So you see placeholders or some other content until the items are realized. The sibling of the list view control is the grid view control. And as you can see, it's a grid. It's used for horizontally scrolling items. In this case, this is the Memories app from the SDK. It's a very rich example. You can see that we support variable-sized items. You have items of different sizes, and I'm going to show you how you go about doing that in just a moment. The two other list controls that we have are two of the smaller list controls. It's combo box and list box. The combo box you see here it's an expanded state, and everybody's seen a combo box before, so that's not overly exciting. Our combo box supports virtualization, and some new functionality that was built in for touch users is carouseling. So if you go on this combo box and swipe to the top really quick, it'll pan, and you'll get some nice momentum there, and at the end of the list, it'll stop. But you can continue to pan with your next swipe through the first part of the items. So if I'm to the Z's, I want to get to the A's again, I don't have to pan a bunch of times to get to the top. I can carousel through to the first item in the list. And I find this really useful because I'm looking through the list, I haven't found my item, and I wanted the first item. So now I can make it easily. I can just pan through the bottom to the top again, and I found that very useful. The list box control is consistent with what you may have seen in other XAML frameworks. It supports virtualization, multi-sized items. It's kind of a scaled-back list view. It doesn't provide quite all the functionality of a list view, but it provides multi-sized items, it provides virtualization, selection, those things. It's just a scaled-back view. This is a picture of it inside the new Bing Maps application. Okay, the part that I wanted to get to is I wanted to start working with some code here. The first thing I want to tell you about the samples that I'm doing here is the focus was all on the XAML, and it's not on making the applications pretty. It's bare bones because I wanted to focus on the features and show you how to implement the features. So the first part is I wanted to start from a blank application. So I'm going to show you exactly how I created this project. And we went to the Windows Store to Project Templates. We created a blank app. And to make the demo go a little bit more forward and not show as much typing today, I added three classes from the grid application template. And I added to the blank application template, I added some standard styles that you can see over here to the right. I also added a sample data source. Again, this is all in the grid view application, and bindable base, which is a class used by the sample data source. If you create a grid application template, you can take apart these classes and see what they contain. So what do we actually get with the blank application template? Let me go ahead and run that. And look, we get a blank application. That's pretty surprising. It shows you that I'm starting from nowhere. So let's go in. And the very first thing I'm going to do, and I'm going to use snippets here so you don't get to see me mistype things, and I'll explain what's in each of the snippets. The first thing that I'm going to do is I am going to add a title to my application. And you're like, well, that's not very hard, is it? And no, it's actually not. What you see is a grid here. It has two rows. We have a lot of XAML developers in the room. The first row is going to contain the title. The second row is going to contain all the content. One thing that you'll notice here is I attached a header style that's all part of standard styles, and I put a padding in it. And so as I run this application, you'll see that the header doesn't align to the left of the page, and that's to create more of a visually appealing experience. You'll notice that all the Windows 8 applications don't start from the far left. They start offset slightly, and that's just to get us to a common look and feel. Now, the next thing that I want to do is I want to add a grid view, because that's what we're really talking today here about, is about list controls. So let me insert a grid view, and I'm going to put that into grid row 1. And we're not doing selection today, so I'm setting the selection mode equal to none. I wanted to show you all this code because I wanted to show you that there's really nothing behind the scenes and needed to do this. Now I'm going to set up my data source. And the data source is also pretty straightforward here. I'm taking advantage of the sample data source that was supplied in the grid template. And you can see here, I have a public property. I have a public property up here that is my sample data groups. I'm constructing it right here. And then I create a collection view source. And our collection view source is used to wrap the data. And it's a class that makes it easier for our controls to communicate with the data source. Here I'm getting the groups. This initializes the data source. The next line, collection view source.source, actually assigns the source of the collection view source. And the next property is source grouped. What that is telling the collection view is that I really have a list of lists here. I have a list of groups. And in order to know what, so I have a list of groups, that's the top level. In order to know what the second level is, what the list of items are, I need to set an items path. And I do that here. And I set it to basically my groups property has an items. My groups have an items property. And that allows me to bind it there. I set the grid view's item source to collection view source. And now we'll run the application again. And you'll see that I have a grid view. It's not a very compelling grid view necessarily because I haven't set any data template or anything. But I do have a grid view template. Okay. Having a technical problem here, which I was hoping not to have. Okay. So, as I added, I can't just project right now. When I show a data template, I think you guys have all seen data templates, I can flesh out what that data looks like. I'm going to do that in just a second. Give me just a minute here. While I wait for my dev machine to come back up, I'm going to shift back to the presentation and jump into grouping. And we'll jump back to that part of the code, and then we'll move on to the grouping code part. So, grouping. So, the XAML list controls support grouping, as I mentioned. The list view and grid view both support grouping. You can see here a common grouping pattern. We have a list of items. We have group headers, all very common. You may want to style this in a lot of different ways. You may want your groups lined up differently. You may want your headers to look differently. And we provided properties to make that all possible. The first property that you can use to configure your list is the groups grid view items panel. And the grid view items panel property is used to configure how groups are laid out in the list. In this case, the gray rectangle represents the panel, and the blue backgrounds represent the children in the panel. In this case, the grid views.items panel is a horizontal stack panel. You can make this any panel you would like to be able to lay out the groups. The next property that I'd like to cover is, once I've laid out the groups, I may want to lay out the items in a group differently. And we do that with a grid view items group style property, and that group style has a panel. In this case, you can see that the gray rectangles represent those panels, basically inside the groups, and the blue items represent the children. In this case, this group is a variable-sized wrap grid. And items are laid out, as you can see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So we've shown you how to lay out the panels, the groups, and the items within the group. You can also lay out the header. The header, we have this header template, which is pretty straightforward. But it's important to note that the header can contain anything. You can set up your header template to contain controls, images, whatever you'd like it to contain. It's a pretty simple property, but it's pretty powerful depending on what you want to put in your group. Excuse me. So the next thing, let's say I've laid out the groups, I've laid out the items in the groups, and that's not enough control for me. We have a group style.item container style. And that item container style allows you to lay out the template for a group item. So not only can you arrange the items within the group, you can also arrange the orientation of the header or the header's relationship to the items. And in this case, you can see that the group title is a content presenter and the items are in items control, but you can position them however you would like. You can put the header above or below the items. You have basically unlimited control there. You could even have the headers overlap the items if you would like. It basically allows you to do pretty much anything. Okay. I'm going to go back into the code here. In just a second. Okay, I'm having some machine difficulties, unfortunately, so I'm going to move through the slides and then I'll go back and do all the coding samples together. We're going to skip this demo right now. And we're going to shift into variable-sized items. One of the pieces of functionality that you see in many applications is variable-sized items, and that you want to have grids laid out differently. In this case, you can see that I have a large item followed by three small items. The way that we do this in XAML is we derive from grid view and override a method, and then that method allows us to set row span and column span properties on our items. So in this case, you can see that we have a grid here. You can look at it as a grid. Each item is basically, in this case, a square. And then we set row span and column span properties to indicate how many rows and columns they take up. So in this case, you can see that the item to the left is a 3-row by 2-column item, and the rest are 1-by-1s. And I'm going to show you how to build that as soon as my machine comes back up. Just give me 1 second here. We're preparing the solution. Okay, we're back to Visual Studio. So we saw this application. The place that we left off was where we wanted to add a data template. So I'm going to go in and I'm going to add a data template now. And my data template is pretty straightforward. Let me copy and paste it over here, and I'll explain what's in there. It basically contains two text blocks. It's in a grid. There's a border, a stack panel with two text blocks, and we do binding to the title and the subtitle title. Most of you have seen XAML before, so you know how the data binding works. As you run this, you'll see that it looks, you'll see as I run this, as it builds and it deploys for the first time, you'll see this is more typical of what you expect for grid view applications. Okay, ta-da. I hope it was worth the wait. But you'll notice that it doesn't align with the left side of the page. So there's some other things that we need to do it to give it that look. Again, that's pretty straightforward as well. You basically set a padding property. And just as you would expect, the padding property is, as everybody's seen one before, but I want to show you something a little bit different about this, is that as we run this, not only is the padding to give you that offset, to give you the nice look over here, but because we want to focus on the content over the Chrome, as you scroll it, we want it to take up all the available space. And so that's some functionality that we built into the feature. You can also add a header to your grid view if you would like, and that header is done by the grid view's header property. And again, that header can contain anything that you want. It could contain charts, pictures, or whatever you want it to contain. Okay, so my demo's a little bit gone awry. The thing that I would like to show now, now that I have grouping, I have items, I'd like to show the variable-sized view that I had over here. And I'd like to show how I'm going to create this view. And the way that I'm going to do that is I'm going to derive from my grid view, and I'm going to override column span and row span properties. And I'll show you how I'm going to set that all up. The first thing that you saw is I only had four items for each of the items, so I'm going to change the property that I go to. Fortunately, my data source has a top items property, which returns the top four items. That's convenient. And I'm going to go into my, I'm going to derive from my grid view class. And in this case, I'm going to add a new class. I'm going to call it sized wrap grid. As I create this class, the thing that I need to do is I only need to override one method in the class. I only need to add one item to the class, but first I need to show you something about grouping. As I go into the grouping, I'm going to add grouping first. Sorry about this. My demo kind of went a little bit awry here, and I'm going to fix it up here. As I mentioned before with the grouping, we have two panels. We have an outer panel and an inner panel. The outer panel is a virtualizing stack panel, and it's set by GridView.items panel, as I showed in the slides. And the GroupStyle.panel property is used to set a variable size wrap grid. You notice the wrap grid has a margin. So as I run this, you'll notice that the groups will be 80 pixels apart. And you can see I have groups here. You notice I have the offset. My header's a little bit messed up, so I need to go in and fix my header, and I'll show us how to do that. I need to do that by editing the header template, which we talked about earlier. And you can see here that I've added a group style.header template. It's pretty straightforward. It's a grid with a text block in it. Pretty straightforward. It has some formatting and stuff to make it look like the way I would like it to look. You can see I have a blue background here. But what I'd really like is I'd really like that group title to stretch across the whole feature. I want that blue band to go across the entire top. And that helps me highlight another feature. And I want to right align a more button up here. So I'm going to show two features here. I'm gonna actually add a button to my header template, and I'm gonna right align it, which is pretty straightforward. You can see here that as I add I'm just adding a button, and my horizontal alignment for that button is right, which is pretty straightforward. And then I need to go in and I need to update the item, the container style. I mentioned the container style before. It allows you to lay out all the items In this case, our item container style normally is my header and my items are in a stack panel. And that's why you got the look that you saw before, where the header didn't take up the whole space, because it didn't have the right, it wasn't using a grid or didn't have the right panel to help stretch that out. So you can see what I've done here is I've changed the container style for that group, and it's a template. It's focused on group item. And I've put a content presenter and an items control in a grid. And by doing that, I've basically stretched out that header to stretch the whole width of the group. As you can see, I now have a grid. I have a grid basically. Grid row one is where the group title is, and the other grid is where the items control is. So that's pretty straightforward to do that. Now I'm going to go back to the wrap grid. As I mentioned before, I need to derive from a method in my new wrap grid class. And so to do that, I need a couple using properties into my sized wrap grid class to support the code that I'm going to show you in just a second. And I need to override one method. And that method is the prepare container for item override method. We'll just replace this. So this looks like a lot of code, but basically prepare item for container override is called any time this container comes into view. It's even when recycling is happening, when we pull it out of the recycle queue, we're going to call prepare for item for container override. And it takes two properties. It passes through two parameters, the element, which is the UI container, and the item, which is the data item. And you saw in my example, I want the first one to be large and the second, third, and fourth ones to be small. And I'm going to do that by this simple modulo operator, where I set group index to be the index divided by 4. When the remainder is 0, I set the row span and column span to 3 and 2, and 1 and 1 otherwise. I have this static method here that's called variable size wrap grid.set column span, and for that particular grid view item, which is this element, I set the row span and column span. Now I need to do a few other things to make this all line up nicely. I need to use my new grid view. I was using the out of the box grid view, so I need to go into my XAML and update this to be a new grid, to be my grid view, my new grid view that I just created. And so I do that. You can see it's just pointing to my class, the selection mode, the name, the row, all those things are the same. And I need to override this. Okay. There's a couple other things. Because I have variable size items, I need to set up my content to stretch. And I do that in a couple different places. I'm going to update my item template to be stretched instead of the 250 pixels that it was before. You can see here that I had it as a horizontal alignment left and a height and width of 250. I'm going to change that to stretch. I'm also going to go in, and one other feature that I'd like to show you is the item container style. The item container style is used to format every item on every grid view item. And in this case, I'm going to update the item container style to set up the horizontal content alignment and vertical content alignment to stretch. So that means my data templates will now be stretched. And the last thing that I need to do, I'm sorry this is such a long step here, but it's all important to show you the different steps that we actually do for variable size items. I need to update my variable size wrap grid. And the variable size wrap grid that I've used as my inner panel here, it needs to get some new properties. And in this case, you can see I left the orientation vertical and I left the margin for separation to be 80. But I set maximum rows or columns to be 3. And what that means is the variable size wrap grid will wrap at the third column. And I set item height and item width to be 250 because that's what I want to be the unit of measure that my row span and column span apply to. So you can see here that now I have variable sized items. I have a 3x2 and one, one, and one. It's all done by overriding that one method and being able to set the sizes. Basically, you have a lot of control here about the different multiples you do and how you lay out the objects. If you want sort of a consistent layout, like a square layout, then you need to use max rows or columns to actually set when those items wrap. Okay. All right, I'm going to switch back to my slides now. We already did that demo. Semantic zoom. How many people know what semantic zoom is? So everybody knows what semantic zoom is, so you guys can all fall asleep for the next 2 minutes. Basically, semantic zoom is used to navigate through large sets of data. With touch, you end up panning a lot. You're ending up panning from the beginning to the end. And semantic zoom allows you to have two views, a zoomed-in view and a zoomed-out view. And the idea is in the zoomed-out view, you see many fewer items. You can navigate them quickly and then zoom into the right item in the inner view. Some functionality that you might not know that it has, in addition to automatically working out of the box and supporting virtualized views for grid view and list view, you can also implement other controls. So you could have your own controls implement an interface, iSemantic Zoom Information, that allows it to also take part in the Semantic Zoom interface. The other thing that you can do is if you're an app, you can also have your own app views. So you can map between two different app views. So I could have one app view that's just a picture that represents whatever data set that I'm trying to view. And based on where they click in the picture, you could take them to a particular place in your overall data set. Now, adding a semantic zoom control is pretty straightforward. You basically just wrap two grid views in a semantic zoom control, and you get the functionality that you're looking for. So you can see here that I'm wrapping a semantic zoom control. I'm wrapping a semantic zoom control around my existing grid view. And I'm going to add, for my zoomed out view, I'm going to add a second grid view that only points to groups. And I just do that here. You can see I have a zoomed out view. The item template is fairly straightforward. It's just pointing to a group. I need to go in and set my data source correctly. And to do that, I'm going to make the second grid view's item source point to the collection view sources view.collection groups property. And so what that does is my zoomed out view is now pointing to groups. As you can see, we're now in the zoomed in view. As I can pan over here to this item. If I zoom out now, I'm zooming out to item 4, and I can go back to that. I can go over here and click on item 1 and come back to item 1. So I can zoom back and forth between those two views pretty easily. It's a pretty powerful capability. I think that a lot of people will want to use this in their applications as a way of navigating through large sets of data. Now, as I mentioned before, you can also implement your own, you can implement iSemantic Zoom Info on your own control. And so what I want to show is, I have some code here for Semantic Zoom Flip View, and I want to show you how you actually do that. Basically, I've created a Semantic Zoom Flip View, which derives from Flip View. It doesn't really override any of the methods, but it also implements iSemantic Zoom Info. And we have a bunch of methods here that you can see that are part of this interface. The first are three properties: is active view, is zoomed in view, and is semantic zoom owner. These are used by the semantic zoom control. You don't have to set them, you only have to implement these properties. Then we have some other methods that are used to control what you see when you're changing from one view to the other view. So I'm going to go in And I'm going to show you the code that actually had to be written here to make a semantic, to make a flip view semantic zoom, to work in semantic zoom. And basically, I've implemented start view change to. All this does is when I'm changing to my flip view, I set the selected item for the flip view to be the source item, the source.item property passed in, its group. It's pretty straightforward. And when I'm changing it from that flip view, I need to tell the other view where I'm going to. And so in this case, I've set the destination item to this selected item. So now I'm going to update my sample to take advantage of this. I'm going to make my outer item, I'm going to make my flip view point to sample data groups, which is the groups that we have there. And I need to use my semantic flip view in my application. So I'm going to replace the grid view that I had inside the semantic zoom with a flip view. You can see here that it just replaces the flip view. It calls it the same thing, so it's using the same item source. And it has a data template here. So as I run this application, you should see the same view that you're seeing before. And as I'm on item 4, as I zoom in, I go to item 4. And if I want to zoom back, assuming this was like 1,000 items, and a flip view isn't necessarily the best way to do that, but I can go back and I'm on item 1. And it's, you can imagine with 1,000 items or 1,000 pages, this would be a good way to navigate through the various items. Again, this is a very powerful paradigm for how you're going to actually navigate through items. All right, I'm going to switch back to my slides. Again, I want to emphasize, you can use it in so many ways because of the interfaces and because of the events that we provided. You basically can take control of the whole semantic zoom experience and make it whatever you want it to be. This is a store app. Now, if you squint a little bit and look at the sample that we did, you can see that I have a grid, I have variable-sized items. I don't have all the pretty pictures in the store app, but we've implemented much of the same functionality. Now, you don't have to do everything that I did today to be able to get to a store app, but using the styles and the templates that I've shown you, you can create your own an app that looks like the store app. And that's something that people have asked, how do I create these things in XAML? So today we've talked about quite a few things. We've talked about the Windows 8 personality. We went through all the list of controls and the list scenarios. The XAML framework team has worked really hard over the last couple years developing these controls to give you something to use and to meet your needs to implement the Windows list scenarios. I also went through some code samples. We went through grouping. We did variable-sized items. We did item templates and data templates. We showed you how to do semantic zoom, and also to take advantage of other controls inside your semantic zoom. As I mentioned earlier, there is another session today on the list controls in JavaScript, and that's, I believe, at 2 o'clock today. And here's some resources about developing and designing. The MSDN documentation, I think, is pretty good for these controls. And if you have any questions, you can go ahead and ask now. It'd be great if you guys could line up behind the microphone so everybody can hear the questions. I'll start right here, and I'll repeat the question.
So I had a question about like when you're panning those grid, the list view, and sometimes the header will like get stuck along. How is that implemented natively?
How is that implemented natively?
Is it implemented automatically, and how would you recommend?
So because one of the internal details about how we do scrolling is we're using a logical scrolling model. And because the header and padding show up as logical scrolling models, then it tends to take up that much space on the scroll bar. So if you have a header and a padding that's similar in size to maybe the items, then you won't see that leg that you have. You won't see that kind of spot that you're looking at. But that's something we're looking at improving.
I was talking more specifically about like as you scroll to like the last item in your group, the header will like stay pinned on the screen.
Oh, you want to implement like a sticky header approach, yes, where we have sticky headers. Right. So we don't have any samples with that. Right now, the scrolling, that's an internal scrolling mechanism that we use to scroll the lists, and it's not exposed right now to be able to take advantage of that. You can do some things on the UI thread to maybe pause that in one place. Like as you scrolled, you could look at where you scrolled to and move it back, but it's probably not going to be as performant as you want it to be. So that's a difficult feature to implement. Can I start in the front?
Hi. What happens when the orientation changes, both for the user and for us developers?
So there's an event that's raised. In the project templates, you can see a layout. There's a layout aware page in the GridView project template that shows how you can actually react to that event. It depends on if you want a different layout. The grid view, if you turn it into portrait mode, the grid view will just realign to the available space. So what I had was a grid with the title, right, and I had a grid below it. And now the size of that grid will change, and the grid view will get taller and skinnier. Now, if you decide that you want to do something in portrait mode that was a list or something like that, then you would have to react to that event and instantiate a list control. The grid project templates do that. They actually, at least for the snapped view, they create a list view, and they use that for the snapped appearance of the application.
Thank you.
So a pretty common approach I've used in a couple of applications is actually put a lot of grid views in a stack panel on the panoramic experience in the first main page to expose different types of templates or different types of content as well. One issue with that is that the grid view doesn't really allow, or that doesn't... raise the manipulation change back to the stack panel, which means that you can't scroll your application with the scroll mouse. Do you have any suggested approach to how to handle that?
It depends on what you're actually trying to do there. I mean, if you want to virtualize it, then that's a challenge. If you use the stack panel,
I just want several grid views laid on next to each other, and then to be able to scroll them with a scroll mouse, because touch is fine, but scrolling with the scroll mouse is impossible because it doesn't raise that manipulation change property back to the stack panel or the scroll viewer.
So this is more of a pretty detailed answer, but when you put a grid view inside of a scroll viewer, it gets an infinite amount of room to arrange itself. So by putting the grid view in the scroll viewer, you've de-virtualized it. It's not being virtualized anymore. So if it has 1,000 items in it, you're going to lay out all those items. So you're not getting advantage of virtualization. We don't actually support nested virtualization in that case, so you can't virtualize those anyhow. But what you want to do is if you have a small number of items, if you put that in a variable-sized wrap grid instead of a wrap grid, instead of something that's virtualizing, then you should be able to lay out and get the scrolling as you want it. So if you used a variable-sized wrap grid for those grid views in the stack panel, you should be okay. And if you want to, I don't know if you have the ability to, if your app's here, we could take a look at it or whatever, or we could do something similar in the code here. I'm going to go to this. If you want to just hop up and then in
great.
Front.
So I've used, for Windows Phone, used a library called a Lazy List Box. Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Well, I was wondering how it relates to this, but I guess it doesn't matter now.
What's the Lazy List Box do?
Well, it supports scrolling through large data sets by switching the templates that's being used. So while it's scrolling, it uses a lightweight template that can fill in text, let's say. And when it stops scrolling, it switches to a template that could be heavyweight with photos and things. So you're...
Right.
It's a way of doing virtualization, yeah.
Right. It doesn't apply.
Okay.
It doesn't apply. There's not a good way. You could hook into the scrolling events and try to figure out when you're on the page and then have a heavier weight template or have something in, you know, as I'm preparing the container, I showed prepare container for item override. Maybe you have something where there's a bit of a delay that I'm not actually going to do the heavyweight stuff until some later time, maybe a half a second or something. The problem is as you go through, you don't want to realize all the heavy content. So what happens is as that container comes into view, it may be out of view before you even care about the heavy content, right?
Right.
And so that's why if you have some sort of delay in there to set that heavy content, you know, with a VSM state or something, then that would be a way to do kind of a lazy loading of an item.
Okay, thank you.
In the back?
How much of this can you not do on a desktop app?
How much of this can you not do on a desktop app?
Of the stuff you just showed, is it all available in a desktop XAML app, or is it only Windows Store? Or?
So the XAML framework that I'm presenting here is the modern XAML framework, and it only works within the store.
Okay.
Okay, so my question is, when you do binding to these list controls, the selected index is automatically set to 0 instead of the expected -1, which is wreaking havoc on my selected index changed event. Is there a way to turn off auto-selecting to 0 on the bind event?
Well, I said selection mode to none, which is one way to do it, right? But you want selection to continue to... You want to be able to select items. You just want nothing selected initially.
Correct. It seems to be a switch from the old days when you bound, it was automatically -1, and now in modern, apparently it's automatically selected 0 index, the first ordinal.
I believe that if you do that after initialize component, set it back to -1, you should be okay. So right. if that doesn't work for you, why don't you come up later and we'll actually walk through it and see if we can try to figure it out.
Okay.
That's a bug then. That's a bug.
Yes. Hi. I realize we're all about touch now, but we still have to support keyboard users, right? So in my app, we have a scenario where you can select something, it pops you into a grid view, and scrolls the grid view into a certain area that shows a certain group. Right. Works great. The only thing is, how do you support a keyboard user there? Is there any way to set the keyboard focus to a group header so when they start hitting the tab and arrow keys, they're right, they don't have to go back to the beginning?
That's another good question. So you'd have to be able to keep track of your group headers and know what to set focus on, right? So. RJ, you got anything? Do you think, prepare, maybe if you kept track of it and prepare item for container override, then once that was there, you could set focus to one of those group headers and react to it. Do you see what I'm saying? So you have to know where that header is.
Right. I know what items are. So how do I get to the header from the item? I know what that first item, for example, in the group is.
So are you bound to a collection view source?
Yes.
Okay, so hopefully your data source allows you to know if I have an item what the group is, right? And then you can do it, you can look through your collection view source, collection view groups, view.collectionviewgroups, and find that item, depending on how big your list is. But that's
okay.
I had a sample that did that. You can use a link query to go through it and compare the collection view groups to the group that's pointed to by collection view group to that.
Okay, a little involved, but okay.
It is a little involved because the thing with virtualization is we're virtualizing all this content for you, and it's moving past, and you don't really we use certain methods like prepare item for container override to notify you that something's coming into view, and that's kind of your opportunity to get involved. Otherwise, we're doing the scrolling.
Right. The way I had it working now is I was setting the keyboard focus to the first item in the group, and actually had to wait until all those things were realized before I could do that. That wasn't the behavior I was looking for. I really wanted to set it to the header, not the first item. But okay.
You'd have to find that item, and that's
yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks.
Hi. Can I show ads in like each of the group? Like if I want to show a different ad based on the group in each as a one item instead of showing it at the end, like when you scroll past.
Yes, you can do that. It's an involved answer, though. It's not. Basically, we have people doing that. I just saw a recipe app. They might even be in the room. A recipe app that did that, and where they used a different data template for the group for an ad. So they used a grouping approach, and they put an ad in instead of a group. And they used a different data template selector for that.
Okay. One more question regarding it. It's related to what was asked earlier. Like, if I've seen a lot of apps like Travel or something, which has a big picture in front, and then when you scroll past that, you see a grid view. So if I put everything under a scroll viewer, as you said, you know, it doesn't virtualize. The experience is not good. But the apps out there on the store, they work pretty well. It's pretty fluid, you know. So how do you accomplish that?
So the way that we do that is if you, I didn't show it, but if you put a header in front of your grid view, so I put that huge picture as a header, and now I can scroll. Now I don't have to nest my scroll viewers. Right. I can use the header property on the grid view to set that picture.
All right.
And that's how I would do that. Yes.
If you have a list view and it's in a virtualized environment, like the data source is virtualized, so how do you actually navigate to an item? So if you try to figure out the horizontal offset or the vertical offset, so it's not actually in pixels. It will give you something in terms of items, like 0.7, 0.8. So if you are trying to figure out what are the items that are visible currently using the scroll viewer of the list view, and the vertical offset, so there's no direct way of figuring out which item is actually visible. And vice versa, if you want to like navigate to a particular item at a certain zoom level, so there's no way to tell the list view that the scroll viewer of the list view where to go.
Okay, there's a couple questions there. Let me see if I got that. In one case, you want to be able to scroll to a particular offset in a virtualized list.
Yeah.
Okay. And is there another part to it, or
The reverse part, like how do you figure out which list, which item is actually visible? So in a scroll viewer, a method could be like you figure out the scroll offset, whatever the vertical offset is, and then figure out where your items would lie. But in the virtualized environment, that vertical offset value that you get is not in terms of pixels. It's in terms of items, like 0.7, 0.8.
Right, so that's how you can scroll to an item, because in a virtualized list, that offset is in items. So if you want to scroll to item 50 or whatever, you can just set that scroll offset to 50, and that will go to item 50.
Yeah, but like actually, if you zoom the list view, so like if a single item occupies your screen, like more than your screen, so then, and if you want to actually navigate to a particular position of that item, then it becomes very difficult. Like for a scroll viewer, it's very easy. You specify the pixels. How do you do that in a list view with the virtualized containers?
You can go to different points. So you could go to 50.5, and that would go halfway through the 50th item. You could use prepare container for item override to keep track of what's on the screen, and then, or to keep track of what containers are being created, and then check to see whether they were on the screen by looking at their location. So we might need to talk afterwards, because that's more of a detailed scenario.
Is there a way to figure out if the list view was pulled beyond the extent? So there are scenarios like an iPhone and in some Windows Phone apps where you pull beyond the end of the list and then it loads more items, like in a Twitter application. Can you do that in Windows 8?
Which part? Do you know that I've scrolled beyond the end of the list?
Yes. So like in your scroll viewer, you reach the end, but you continue pulling with a finger.
So there's an end. We have an end, and when we reach the end, there's an overbounce effect. So you actually go a little bit beyond if you're touching.
Yep.
As you pan up, you'll get a little bit of an overbounce.
Yep.
You don't know that you're in that area. You can know as you approach the end of the data,
yep.
And that's what we do for incremental loading. As we approach the end, then we call a data source that we call your data source and ask for more data. And we'll do that for you automatically.
So I would have to use that underlying infrastructure for virtualized data. Right?
Mm-hmm. That's the best way, I would think.
Okay. Another question I had was, is there a way to start handling all the pointer and manipulation events while you're scrolling on the list? Like if you actually want to handle some other action than just panning over the list. So,
I don't believe so. I think our panning mechanism right now, as you're scrolling, it captures
capture.
Those events.
Okay, thanks.
All right, if anybody has any other questions, they can come on up, and thank you all for coming.